Hello, my name is Marlene, and I'd like to welcome you to Vegan Nation, a program about the vegan evolution revolution happening worldwide. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station nor its management. Vegan Nation is about freedom, peace, health, and liberation. In this episode, we're paying a memorial tribute to Karen Davis. Dr. Karen Davis, an activist, author, and the founder of United Poultry Concerns in Virginia. Rest in peace, Karen. February 4th, 1944 to November 4th, 2023. We'll be hearing snippets of Karen's recent interviews. And also a snippet of my interview with Karen back in 2015. Let's start out with a recent interview from 2022. And this is Dr. Karen Davis being interviewed by Animal Activism Mentorship. Turkeys, who are they? And why should we care?
When I started researching my book in like 2003, 2004, I was very influenced by the fact that the news media every year, the Washington Post, the New York Times, and all these other newspapers would always, it was a kind of foreplay to Thanksgiving Day. All of these very disdainful, very sarcastic articles and discussions of turkeys, like they were just a figure of sarcastic fun. And of course, I became interested in this question of like, why are turkeys caricatured this way? Why is it that this is the ritual leading up to Thanksgiving Day, the news media ritual and so on? Well, I became interested in all of that. And I read newspapers back then avidly, even, you know, that was kind of like when the internet was still just getting started. But meanwhile, as a result of my experience at Farm Sanctuary with Milton and Doris, I was very attracted to these birds who they just want you to pet and stroke them. They're very, very sensuous birds. So are chickens, by the way. They like you to pet their beaks and under their chins and, you know, their wattles and so on. And but I was very drawn to them. And then after I left Farm Sanctuary, we did adopt, my husband and I at the time. My husband was very helpful in those early years until we parted ways. He was very helpful. And we adopted Mila and Priscilla, about whom I have written, because one of the things that interested me about Mila and Priscilla, who were both two white turkeys from one of those poultry farms that, like a little store, that would put these turkeys in a cage outside the store, live turkeys, to entice people to come in and either have a turkey slaughtered for them or buy one that had been slaughtered. So two really nice people in Maryland, I believe they purchased these two turkeys, the female turkeys, and they contacted me, and we were in Maryland at the time, in a little rural area in Montgomery County outside Washington, D.C., and said, well, we rescued these two white turkeys from this kind of a store that was used as advertisement to get people to come in and have a turkey slaughtered for them or have them slaughtered for them. And would you like to adopt them? So, yeah, I said, sure, we'll adopt them. So we did adopt them. And actually the two people who rescued them wrote a very charming poem as if they were talking about how they almost got to be the real turkey inside of me. Thanks to Karen Davis and United Poultry Concerns. I almost got to be who I was meant to be, but because of how I have been bred to be so heavy and all of that. I have never quite been able to fully express my nature. So anyway, it's a lovely poem, and it's right on our website in our turkey section and all of that. Well, Myla was a very gentle Pacific turkey. She was very sweet natured and seemed to be quite happy, whereas Priscilla seemed to be an angry turkey. She would actually get into moods where her whole face would start to become purple, and her snood, that piece of flesh that hangs down in front of the turkey's face, which, by the way, in the turkey industry, they just pull that off when they're born. They just rip it right off the front of their face when they debeak them, and they just pull the snood off. So it's spelled S-N-O-O-D. So anyway, her snood would become like angry looking, and she would charge people. She would charge me, and she would charge my husband. So what really interested me when this was happening was that Myla, when she would see Priscilla start to get in one of those angry purple moods, Myla would walk between Priscilla and Priscilla's target, human target, and she would start to yelp like she was saying, "Priscilla, please don't do this. Please don't do this." And she would go back and forth between Priscilla, who was like angry, and us, who were like, "Oh my God," you know. And Myla actually succeeded in calming Priscilla down. And we saw this happen time and time again. So Myla was picking up on Priscilla's moods, and she was intentionally intervening and trying to stop an attack. And that was just so interesting to me, among other things, because we were saved from an attack, but also because you hear the turkey industry, as they do with chickens and turkey farmers and so on, you know, they want to distance people from any kind of empathy for turkeys or any sense that turkeys are friendly and you could love a turkey as much as your pet dog or cat or something like that, or the turkeys are intelligent. So I love to tell the story. Well, these were two turkeys who were bred for the turkey industry. They're not wild turkeys, Myla and Priscilla. And yet there was no doubt at all that Myla understood what Priscilla was about to do and Priscilla's mood, and that she didn't just understand it, but that she took steps, literal steps, and vocalized, "Please don't do this, Priscilla." So I've told that story, and I tell it in my book More Than a Meal. So anyway, I did all this reading. I even went to Plymouth Plantation in, where is that, Massachusetts? And I remember, you know, the first plantation. And I went up there specifically to go to their little library and their gift shop to read every book I could read there about that mentioned anything about turkeys, turkeys and the pilgrims, turkeys and the with the Puritans, turkeys with the Native American Indians, and so on. And I sat there all day long from the time it opened until they closed. And I remember the two women who worked there, they said, and I came up to them with an armload of books that I was going to buy after I'd sat in that little stool reading all these books and everything that had to do with turkeys. And they said, "Nobody ever came into the bookshop. Hardly anybody reads any of these books. And you've been sitting here like for 10 hours. So you must have something important here that you want to know or that you found out, hopefully." And I said, "Absolutely. I want to learn all about turkeys." So they said, "Oh, the first Thanksgiving." I said, "Well, yeah, but I'm more interested in the turkeys themselves, really." But anyway, so I did all this reading about turkeys and learned how they had been treated so badly, both verbally and literally. And again, they would just, people would just shoot them for anything, any reason at all. And so I began to compare all of that with all the reading I was doing in the Washington Post and other publications. And I said, really, this is a book I want to write because I've come to know some turkeys. Wanda and Willow were two other turkeys we adopted from Farm Sanctuary. And then we had Aubrey and we had Boris. And, you know, they were just wonderful to be with. And Florence and Amelia. Florence lived for 7 years, even though she was a heavy white turkey. And they're just so friendly. You know, one of the things about turkeys that is very interesting is that they are at home in every element, except the concentration camp situations that we keep them in. Every element, they are at home on the ground, in the sky, in the trees, and they swim. Adult turkeys swim. The turkey poults, the young turkeys, P-O-U-L-T-S, that's what young turkeys are called, the turkey poults, and they swim. So these turkeys have their senses are very, very keen. And one thing I noticed with all the turkeys that we have ever adopted was that even when they came here and they were brand new at our sanctuary, first in Maryland, and then we moved here to our sanctuaries in Virginia in 1998, is how quickly they learn where they're to go in at night, where they are to go in at night. They would go out into the surrounding fields and poke around out there because, you know, chickens are, and turkeys, they are wanderers. They like to wander around during the day. They like to get up very early. I've told people how chickens and turkeys see the sunrise about an hour before humans do because they see infrared light. So they're up very early in the morning when for us it's still pretty dark, and they're out there just roaming around and foraging for food and everything. And they're out there all day. But I saw at our own sanctuaries how at night they want to come in. They want to come in and roost at night. Well, when we were in Maryland and here also until 2014, when we had our whole 12,000 square feet completely enclosed, predator-proof enclosed, so that the birds can sleep in the trees and so on without worry about being attacked by a hawk or an owl or a fox or a possum or some other type of predator. But they wanted to go in at night. They wanted to, and they knew exactly where to come to go to sleep at night, to roost at night. And I always felt so sorry for these turkeys who have been bred to be so heavy by the turkey meat industry because they want to get up high at night. They want to get up preferably high up in the trees. But like the chickens who have been bred for the chicken industry, they are so heavy that it is very hard for them to be able to lift themselves off anything much higher, particularly as they get older, than a bale of straw. But they will do that if they can. And I remember reading an article in a book of essays about the wild turkey and how one of the essays, the writer talks about how, well, turkeys have such a desire to roost at night that even if you clip their wings, they will go to the closest branch, the lowest branch, and they will make their way up from branch to branch until they get as high up as they can get. So anyway, I learned how turkey mothers are just absolutely fantastic mothers. I read a number of years ago in a letter to the editor in a Virginia magazine in which the writer describes being in the woods one day. And she says, I saw a mother turkey with her poults. She had 10 baby turkeys with her in the woods. And she said, all of a sudden, there was a hawk overhead. And she said, that mother turkey flew vertically straight up into the air, kind of positioned herself on her back almost, and flew at that hawk. Just flew at that hawk and attacked that hawk. And she describes how the hawk flew a bit and then circled back around like the hawk was still going to go down to the ground and grab one of those turkey poults, one of those babies. And she said so quickly that mother turkey went back at that hawk and attacked the hawk again. And at that point, the hawk gave up, said, okay, I'm leaving, and flew away. Yeah, isn't that great?
We're listening to a recording of Dr. Karen Davis, a memorial tribute to Karen. You tuned into Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Narrow, in Worcester, Massachusetts. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. We'll be taking a short break, and then we'll continue with our program. We're listening to The Turkey Song by Will Tuttle. The recordings featured in this program are derived from the United Poultry Concerns website from November 7th. Remembering Karen Davis. Karen passed away on November 4th, and these recordings that I'm sharing are edited shortened snippets from her interviews, which are over an hour long. Three of them are now on the United Poultry Concerns website that the organization Animal Activism Mentorship featured Karen for several interviews. Welcome back from the break, and thank you very much for tuning in to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene, in Massachusetts. We're continuing our memorial tribute to Karen Davis, founder of United Poultry Concerns, nonprofit organization, and also sanctuary in Virginia. Here's Karen from last year, 2022, in her interview with Animal Activism Mentorship, an insider look at the modern poultry industry.
But everything is true, and it's all terrible and unbelievable and almost unimaginable, truly. Anyway, in 2008, I started from scratch and revised and enlarged Prison Chicken's Poisoned Eggs and published it in 2009. So my book is very comprehensive. It looks at the chicken, turkey, duck industries, both the meat type industries and the egg industries in great detail. And it is fully referenced so that anybody who thinks, well, you know, I'm just making this stuff up, you cannot make this stuff up. It's fully documented, and where you get your information about what these birds are being put through, you get it from the industry. The only difference between the way they describe what is happening and being done to chickens and turkeys, for example, is by reading their own literature and attending their own seminars and conferences. The difference is that they don't show any compassion for these birds. And many people are not even aware of the fact that all of the big pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer and Merck and Upjohn and you name it, they all have what they call farmed animal health divisions as part of their enterprise. And so a huge amount of poultry experimentation is done by these pharmaceutical industries. So that's just another aspect of the agribusiness. One of the things that happened in the late 1940s, like 1949 to 1951, there were these chicken of tomorrow contests. So they held these contests, and various chicken breeders from around the country would submit their chickens for who grows the fastest and the largest. And that was the idea, to try to raise chickens who would grow to a very large weight in a very short time. And particularly, they wanted a chicken who would develop a very large breast, which is why they cannot walk by the time they've lived a couple of weeks, most of them. Or if they can get up on their feet, they're in such pain because their skeletal system cannot support their body weight. Chickens are slaughtered around 6 weeks of age. I'm talking about the chickens in the chicken meat industry now entirely. So you have all this rapidly accumulating poundage on top of this baby bird's bones. And that is why they go to slaughter crippled and in extreme pain. I cannot look at a so-called drumstick, a chicken leg, without thinking of the agony that that leg endured and that that chicken to whom that leg belonged underwent. So anyway, these chicken of tomorrow contests, they were based on two main strains, which have since been just bred, inbred, crossbred. And this breeding just goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. Again, pharmaceutical companies do the breeding. There are specific breeders, you know, they've all shrunk to just like a few main breeders. One way or the other, the hens used for egg production are going to be slaughtered. So if it's a commercial enterprise, once they are no longer, as the industry sometimes says, paying their way, they're going to either kill them on site with carbon dioxide. They'll, you know, shove them into these boxes and shoot hoses full of carbon dioxide, which freezes and burns the bird's lungs simultaneously and asphyxiates them. So it's a horrible death. The rest are going to go to what they call spent fowl plants. That's F-O-W-L. I mean, when you read about these hens and they are being hung upside down on the assembly lines and they're flapping their wings and they're terrified and they're given electric shocks and it's really unbearable to realize that this is the egg industry and it doesn't matter whether they're called free range or whatever they're called. They're either going to be gassed horribly to death or they're going to be given electric shocks to paralyze the muscles of their feather follicles so that their feathers will come out more easily after they've been scalded to death, and also to fit them to the slaughter process and the slaughter equipment. So that kind of leads me right now into, and then of course I want to mention also that for the egg industry hens, they're almost always debeaked. Their beaks are either burned off or chopped off. They use laser beams to cause their beaks to crumble off. Again, they have these guillotine-like things that chop off the bird's beaks. Somebody sits there all day and just takes one chick after another, chops off the beak, throws it into a bin, on the chick goes, in what they call the servicing rooms.
We're listening to Dr. Karen Davis of United Poultry Concerns. And here she's talking about hens.
Only lay what they call two clutches, each of about 10 to 12 eggs, a total of 24 eggs in the spring and early summer. And then they're done laying eggs. That's all the eggs they lay. So you can imagine it is almost unimaginable, pressure that is put on these small hens' bodies. They only weigh like 3 to 4 pounds. The pressure that is put on their bodies to keep churning out eggs, making eggs. The hens don't just lay eggs. That sounds like a passive thing. Well, an egg just kind of falls out of their body, but that's not the way it works at all. Forming an egg inside the body of a bird is a very biologically intense activity. So it's very demanding on the energies of the hen. So she has to keep churning out these eggs, whether she's in a battery cage or a cage-free egg facility, or even if she's a so-called free range, all kinds of things can happen. And then the body can't keep up with the constant manufacture of all these eggs. And one of the things I saw when I attended, I stopped going to it. I got the picture after 10 years of going to the International Poultry Expo every January in Georgia. It's acres and acres of pharmaceuticals, poultry slaughter equipment, everything that has to do with the poultry industry. As I said, it's an international expo. People from all over the world in every sector of the poultry industry, poultry and egg industry, attend it. And again, you know, you're one of the only people there who doesn't find all this just wonderful. Everybody thinks it's fabulous, you know. So, because they're all poultry people or wannabe poultry people, or they're in poultry science departments at various universities and so on. So I remember one year I was there and I happened to come to one of the egg industry booths and I saw all these plastic containers of some kind of a brown liquid. And so I said, well, what is that? And they said, oh, this is spent hen liquid, spent hen meal. There's spent hen meal and then there's spent hen. I've forgotten the exact, euphemism they use, but it's like, this is what they extract from the hens of the egg, from the egg industry, and probably from the parent flocks of both the egg and the meat industry. It was this brown liquid that they feed back to the hens. And you see, in my book, Prison Chickens, Poisoned Eggs, I talk a lot about how the horrible diet that these birds are fed is a main cause, among all the other main causes, of all of the diseases that they suffer from. The chickens who are bred for the meat industry and the turkeys. They are in the worst condition of all the birds. The hens from the egg industry, they have reproductive problems. They are susceptible to reproductive tumors and things that relate to their reproductive, the excessive demand for eggs on the reproductive system.
These ones by my side, they are my family. Might not look much to you, but they're everything to me. Oh, oh. Brought into this world with only one purpose. We don't know our fate yet, just the way. Deserve this, no. Oh, 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 my one life, just in my prime. Please, this time, can you see through my eyes?
The song is by Evelyn Simpson in Ireland. I dedicate this song to Karen Davis.
I'm pushed off of the truck, smell of blood in the air. Where are we going? I'm just so scared. Oh-oh. Walk in one by one, oh so reluctantly. I hear the screams of my best friend in front of me. Oh, 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 her one life, just in her prime. Please, this time, see it through her eyes.
Dr. Karen Davis joined us on Vegan Nation on May 1st, 2015. Here's a snippet of her interview.
We want people, obviously, to stop eating chickens and stop eating their eggs, and we want people to be vegan and to choose an animal-free diet, but we also want people to incorporate activism into their lives, however they can do that.
So we've been joined by Dr. Karen Davis, founder and director of United Poultry Concerns, based in Virginia, and let's give a cluck and go vegan.
That's right. Give a cluck, go vegan. Thank you, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your show. Thank you, Marlene.
The website of United Poultry Concerns is upc-online.org. I'd like to thank Dr. Karen Davis for joining us on Vegan Nation. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation.
Please join us again next week at the same time. You can hear this program again at vegansradio.com. This is Molly Narrow in Worcester, Massachusetts, wishing you a good day.
We can lead healthy, happy, and fulfilling lives without harming those who share this world with us. Why on earth would...
Karen Davis joined us on Vegan Nation in 2015 via Skype in Machipongo, Virginia. Let's go out with Vegan Smythe in Australia.
Fulfilling life without harming those who share this world with us. Why on earth wouldn't we? Oh, since we can lead healthy, happy, and fulfilling lives without harming those who share this world with us. Why on earth wouldn't we? Oh, why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we?
That's right. Give a cluck, go vegan.